right. So you're listening in San Francisco to IndieBay.org's radio station. And on the line with us is Lynn Stewart. Lynn Stewart is just one more of the long-growing list of enemies of the state that the Bush cadre have come up with. And in her case, she was working on a lawyer for some Islamic fundamentalists who were accused years before the 9/11 incident. So Bush, wanting to get rid of such a case, found a clever way to insinuate that the attorney for this case was some sort of a terrorist because she was working on a case for Muslim cleric Omar, is that right, Lynn Stewart?
Abdelrahman.
Oh, Abdelrahman, that's right.
That's okay.
And you tell us about that. Am I basically right that you have been swept up in this mass hysteria of terrorism when you were working on a case before 9/11 even happened?
Yes, indeed. Well, as I said, they're always shifting the rules as the game is played out, and that's the government's secret weapon, that they make the rules, so therefore they can change them at will. But I was a lawyer for Sheikh Omar Rahman in the Abdelrahman in a 1995 trial. He was convicted, and by the year 2000, he was serving a life sentence in the middle of Minnesota. And on a visit to him, made with my interpreter, he asked if I would make a press release, and because I perceive the role of a lawyer as, not only I, but I mean as part of the rules of ethics, the role of a lawyer is to keep one's client alive in any way possible. And so we went ahead and we made a press release to Reuters News Service. The government has now spun this out of recognition into aiding terrorism, because the press release dealt with some political events around a ceasefire in Egypt, and they characterized that as he, as a leader, calling for an end to a ceasefire.
But before you go on, Lynn,
the only thing of the case was that nothing ever happened. He called for the end of the ceasefire, and there was nothing that ever occurred, no violence of any kind.
Okay, before you go on, Lynn, now, just thinking about this from a legal viewpoint, you can't be charged with a crime if there is no law about it, right? And if I recall right, the way that you're being swept up in this is the use of the word terror and then the implication that treason comes into it. Now, if it's my understanding that, is it not just world court, but I think even United States court, that you, if treason is not a charge that you can be charged with unless there is a time of war. And in what you were accused of happened before 9/11, and so as such, you couldn't be charged with a terrorism crime because there was no crime about terrorism.
Well, I have to correct you, David. I'm sorry, but our friend Bill Clinton, who looks pretty good to a lot of people now that we have Bush, but in reality was merely a different shade of the same color. He had passed a law in 1996 called the Anti-Death Penalty Act, and as part of that there was a portion that spelled out, quote, material aid to terrorist organizations. But what they did in this case was they bootstrapped a prison regulation into being a an absolute for making out that case. The prison regulation forbade the client from making a press release, and so what they did was they charged a conspiracy to conspire to make this press release.
Well, let's see, we think of the word attorney and lawyer, but there's also the word an advocate. And if I expect, we've had these corporate mergers of the news being, this has been long before Hearst 100 years ago. So the idea that the media was essentially not allowing Ruckman's story to even come out in the cheesiest of the tabloids. The idea of you acting as an advocate, did you have anything to do with, well, I shouldn't ask such a question, but the idea of you allowing a press release to come forth, it's almost as if they made an administrative rule about press releases coming out of a certain jail.
Yeah, well, they made it for him alone. That's what makes it so insidious.
And that, too, you know, that's
a law that was fashioned only for him and basically said he couldn't communicate with the media, which certainly has First Amendment implications. And actually, all he was calling for was a reexamination of the ceasefire that was already in place, which he had advocated.
Sure.
And he was saying, you know, it doesn't seem to be doing us any good to have given up what we had before, so let's look it over. But I'm not saying it should end. I'm not calling for an end to it. But the government, of course, chose to spin it the other way because it served their purpose, which was to keep that terrorism flame burning and burning so bright that it just obscures people's vision.
By the way, what was the date that this all happened? This was long before 9/11, right?
At least it was May of 2000, the press release, and at the time, all the government did was say you have to sign the rules and regulations again.
Yeah, it was a year and a quarter before.
Went back in and saw him again. So, I mean, obviously what was not a big deal in May of 2000 suddenly became a federal crime carrying 30 years in March of 2002.
You know what? You were talking about fanning the flames. I think of it. May of 2000, the Democrats and the Republicans were just really ponying up, jockeying into place for the big summer run of the presidential year.
Yeah.
And so they needed a spooky story to, you know, to gallop onto the certain intellectually challenged batch of constituents. And, you know, these neocons, they've tailored who they want to feed information to, and that's how, you know, how the Clear Channel works.
Basically, you're 100% right. I do.
Once in a while.
So I can tell you that no one was more surprised than I in April of 2002 at the time of my arrest when, you know, I was accused of these heinous crimes, you know, the traitor stuff and all of that. I mean, I am.
But they wouldn't say that before the. And see, now this was the other thing, too, and you're probably well aware of what really happened in the World Trade. Didn't they admit that the FBI gave the bomb, a working bomb, to the people that bombed the World Trade Center the first time in 1993? And so the FBI, it was a setup from the start, and they gave them a working bomb. And I don't know if you're aware of this business of the robbery attempt, but it's thought that the two gold brokerages in the basement of the World Trade Center buildings were to be timed with this explosion in 1993, and it was really a robbery attempt on this huge, massive, you know, vaults of gold underneath there.
Mm-hmm.
And are you aware of that?
I wasn't aware of all of that. What I'm basically aware of in the case I tried of the Sheikh in 1995 was that, you know, they used a double agent, a fellow that was working for the Egyptians and the Americans, and of course, it was definitely in the Egyptian interest to make sure my client was locked away for the rest of his life. It's just like, you know, locking away the opposition. I'm sure if the British could lock up everybody in the IRA, which they've done periodically, or you know, in other words, it's much easier when you don't have anybody opposing you, and I'm sure Mubarak in Egypt was aware of that.
Yeah, this is it's a really ugly story, you know, what's going on here. By the way, it also crossed my mind that there might be an administrative angle. Isn't with this Terry Schiavo case just recently, it was, I believe they call it bills of attender in the Congress, that it's actually a violation of the Constitution that you can't have the entire Congress put together a law for one person.
Yeah.
And so in the case of this Sheikh Ruckman, this... Was it the warden that put together a law?
Well, actually, it's the Justice Department, you know, and they did it, you know, when fascism creeps in, it comes in very legally. So they used the Federal Register, and they promulgated the rules, and they asked for objections to them. And
well, that would be basic.
Objections from lawyers of all kinds, you know, about the restrictiveness. And they amended them somewhat, but basically these rules were then promulgated for him. So it's not like, how can I say it? He couldn't be accused of a crime by virtue. That's a bill of attainder. In other words, if we say, what did Joe do, and then let's make a crime out of it.
Right, before the fact,
that.
Yeah.
And what they were doing was Terry Schiavo, obviously. But this has a smell of that, you see, and we don't cotton to that very well, even though you might be hard-pressed to win it in a court of law, certainly in a court of public opinion. It certainly sounds like, you know, we got this guy, now we're going to roll the rock over his tomb out there in Minnesota so that he can't speak, he can't be heard, he can't communicate with anybody. And what was to prevent that? The lawyers.
No, I've always been confused about how an administrative rule could be determined, though. I mean, unless this Sheikh Rahman had agreed to it with the DA that he would not have the ability to do press releases. But I would take it if we're a Judeo-Christian country like these guys purport, then truth shall set us free. And so that said, essentially, if Sheikh Rahman was trying to get his version of the truth out and you were his advocate, it would not. You can't charge an attorney for being an advocate, especially for an administrative rule that couches close to a bill of attainder. So, and especially as an administrative rule versus something that that's just a basic due process violation against him, and then you're being charged with a crime based upon a violation of his due process.
Well, that sounds right to me, but, you know, here's what we do know is that the true face of the government is not the one that they would like people to see. And the true face is they don't really want debate. They don't really want competing opinions. They want their opinion, and they want it alone, and they want to be able to go forward with it. And they do silence dissent, and they do it in many, many ways. Now, this time, it had a certain payload on the other side of the world in the Middle East, so they definitely wanted to keep him quiet, and so they did. And they had the power to do it because he was locked up in their jails. And if we don't believe that, people who are listening who have people in jail know how easy it is for the prison officials to move someone into a special housing unit or into an incommunicado form of jail. And if the lawyer does go after them, it takes months and years for that to be resolved. So, you know, they are very well aware of how to do this, and they devised this method, and we did our very best to at least make things happen that we thought were within the legal rules. In other words, were in the rules of ethics as to how you defend people.
Well, sure. I let's see, and we need to really make sure that we discuss. You're hoping that our listeners, as well as the tens of thousands that are sitting in every hidey hole across the world that's listening to this radio through Homeland Security. Oh, by the way, Lynn, have you ever read any Alexandre Dumas, for example, Count of Monte Cristo?
Oh, yeah.
It's a great book. And when I've learned that Homeland Security wanted to study our library cards, first thing I checked out was Count of Monte Cristo.
That's terrific, Dave.
Sure, yeah.
Absolutely right. Well, yes, we are hoping. At this point, having been convicted of the government's heinous crimes and facing 30 years, we're happy to report one thing, and that is the judge has complete discretion to give me probation. And we're hoping that we can convince him to do that by having a massive letter-writing campaign in which ordinary people who may not necessarily be familiar with me but are at least familiar with the case enough write a letter to the judge and say, you know, this is not something that we think, someone that we think needs to be punished by putting her in jail for even a minute. And so we're asking people to write those letters and ask this judge in New York to please show some mercy in this case.
All right. And let's see, I have the basic press release about it. We can make sure that if our listeners go to indiebay.org, they can, oh, by the way, as I'm talking, get out your pencils because we'll tell the mailing address to send these letters to. But on indiebay.org, you'll find, along with this news story, the information about where to send a copy to. And I'll now, so we're going to send this off to the Honorable John Knoll?
No, we're going to send it to my lawyer.
Oh, I see. Okay.
That's there's an inner address that goes to John Koetl. That's the judge, K-O-E-L-T-L. And he's the district judge in New York at the courthouse at 500 Pearl Street, New York, 10007. And then, but the real mailed final product is to go to my lawyer, Jill Shello Levine, and she's at 2537 Post Road, Southport, Connecticut. CT is the abbreviation. 06890.
Okay, so.
And we're hoping to get those letters in by July 1st. And as I said, we really want sincerity, conscientiousness, people to say why they think that sending lawyers to jail is a bad idea. Not necessarily to talk about the ins and outs of the case, because I recognize the case is very complicated. And all the facts are almost impossible for someone who doesn't have a couple of months to study up on it to find out. We do have an overview that's on our website at www.lynnestewart.org. And anybody who wants information, please go there. We also have an overview of the case there. But we're basically saying to people who have this sense of the case that they should write to the judge and talk about the fact that it's been unfair the way I was prosecuted, that I was singled out, that there were others that were not prosecuted. If that is the real intent of the government, that I was made an example of, that this will have a chilling effect on lawyers representing people accused of crime, and that it's just a bad thing for the Constitution to have this kind of a persecution of a lawyer who's just trying to do her job.
Well, sure, much less. You're probably aware of the expression Night of the Long Knives when Adolf Hitler, who did get elected in the beginning, but he had a whole bunch of middle grounders, middle of the roaders, who were slowing him down. He wanted to get to building Auschwitz. He wanted to build the death camps and the looms that would deal with human hair to make bedding for the other slaves. These middle of the roaders were slowing him down. So in the middle of the night, it was this 1935, I believe, 2 years after he got elected, he sent out his stormtroopers, the brown shirts, and the early Gestapo to the early black shirts to. They slaughtered with swords and whatnot, mayors and administrators, a lot of upper echelon people all across Germany were killed a matter of years, short years after Hitler was elected. That was called the Night of the Long Knives. Uh-huh. Middle roaders and somewhat aristocrats, families of aristocrats, not the highest of the high, but definitely well into side of them. And the Prussian families particularly lost membership through this Night of the Long Knives. So to go after the attorneys and to go after the idea that you can hire an advocate, you know, here, what's going on with Fox News and CNN and MSNBC, and they all run the same schmear hour after hour after hour after hour after hour, and they lie and they lie and they lie. They're doing the big lie. So you, the general public, have got no ability to compete against that monstrosity. You could be entirely innocent, and still this, you know, the slander's coming out day after day after day. For year after year, and even if they're caught, they'll keep going with it. So this idea that they can invest, they can use stolen money to buy liars, and it's very interesting. It's almost a mathematical formula because it happens so many times throughout centuries. But in any case, with this stolen money, they then buy liars to tell the public to look the other way. And in your case, they are essentially saying that an administrative rule in a heightened fear of crisis based upon a law that was, well, a case that is dubious at best. I really, you know, I support you all the way. This whole, I would, have you gotten many supporters straight out of the bar association? For example, have state bar associations had the courage to speak up about this case?
Well, we truly are trying to organize them to the best of our ability. You know, they are also, like many Americans, very frightened these days, very unwilling to put to sign on and, you know, put their names tops on the list. But we're making steady inroads. We're going to put together a West Coast defense committee composed only of lawyers, legal workers, you know, law school professors, students, in other words, the legal community. So we think that would be very impressive and very much, very, very important for the judge to get letters from those segments or resolutions from bar organizations, et cetera. So we're working steadily on it, and of course the Lawyers Guild, always the great protector of lawyers' rights and human rights, has been with me every step of the way.
You know, it's always interesting to me to see how the corrupt can usually join in supporting a case, and so I've always looked at how the Republicans can be induced to find a similarity to your case to how, so for example, how many of these crooked Republicans are really attorneys for corporations that are known violators of every kind of contract law, and they're stealing from the government, and they're not paying their taxes and whatnot. So a case like yours, I mean, like, imagine Bill Gates, you know, in the big Microsoft case that was going on for 7 years or longer than that, really almost a decade, and Bill Gates bought an advocate. He bought a whole fleet of advocates, and so do you think as willful a terrorist as Bill Gates has been to this country, with shoddy product and hazardous wastes and financial irresponsibility, and he's far more dangerous than Sheikh Rahman has ever been. And so these corporate lawyers, they're going to be asked to, I mean, look at some of the tax lawyers, the idea that they're going to try to fix a case in the public's eye.
No, David, the misconception is that the government really goes after these guys. You see, they don't need the protections that, you know, little Joe, who's arrested for shoplifting in Macy's, needs, because they have privilege to begin with. And so as a result, their lawyers are accorded the privilege of class that the little person arrested or the black guy from Oakland that gets hauled in by a racist police department never gets accorded. So, you know, that aspect of the bar, we asked originally, we have spoken to originally, they have never been come back. Even more important are the political persons, the persons like yourself who find fault with the system and are willing to speak out and say it. If they are cut off from their lawyers, this is the true thing that we are worried about, that I see very clearly happening, that no one will want to do the political cases anymore, and the government will have a free rein to criminalize the signing of a petition, the meeting in a house to plan an action against pollution, whatever it is we do. So that is really the absolute, I guess I can use it, ground zero of this case.
Sure, we're in a strange position. So I'll be glad to. You have just by going to lynnstewart.org or .com? It's not .com.
.org.
Okay. lynnstewart.org, and it's LYNNE Stewart, STEWART.org. You've got more specifics about how you would like these letters approached?
Everything you want to know and probably more.
great. And we'll put a good link up at our site,
terrific.
Too.
Terrific. And I thank you very much for spending the time with me.
Oh, no trouble. Appreciate you calling in.
Okay, great.
All right, night.
Bye-bye.